The human spirit is unconquerable. We are individuals and we are sovereign, born with unlimited potential, gifted from our creator. Our mission is to break free from the systems that bind us.
I volunteer as tribute.
We strive for peace and prosperity and overcome all challenges, roadblocks, and obstacles. We are empowered because we think for ourselves and we act for ourselves. We are self-reliant and independent, but guided by the wisdom of those who share our values.
What possible difference can I make?
There is no government, no ruler, nor ideas that are able to stop us. We are driven to succeed because we seek political freedom, financial freedom, and spiritual freedom.
It's all for nothing if you don't have freedom.
This is Mike Corbell, and you are listening to The Invictus Mind. Well, good morning, everyone. This is another edition of The Invictus Mind. This is, of course, your host, Mike Corbell. We're going to have sort of a bonus episode this week, just because I didn't get a chance to release anything over the Thanksgiving holiday. Hopefully, everyone had a wonderful Thanksgiving with their family. I sure did. I ate too much as usual, but that's part and parcel of the game. Today, we're going to be talking with a woman who shares the name of a friend of mine, Amy Nichols. Amy is actually the winner of the Nomad Network Content Creation Challenge. Yes, I'm actually invited her on to tell her story. She not only is a great content creator, she's actually a tattoo artist by trade. She is the owner of the Beyond the Pale Art Studio in, you said you're in Maryland, right, Amy?
Yep, in Maryland.
All right. You're also a master barber, and so I don't have much hair, so I don't really have a need to see a barber right now. How are you doing today, Amy?
I'm great. Thank you for all of those pre-show like investigations into me. I feel honored. That's awesome.
Well, you know, we're doing each other a favor. You actually reached out to me first, as we are both part of the Nomad Network. And I know I'm not sure if you've been talking a lot about that on your podcast, but I had a couple of guests on my show who are also part of the Nomad Network. Of course, we can thank Mr. Jason Stapleton for setting that up, but it's definitely been a place where like-minded individuals could get together and just talk about what they're doing in life to make them champions. Now, here on The Invictus Mind, I love having conversations. I tell people that my show is about political freedom, financial freedom, and spiritual freedom. And so I told my wife last night that I was doing an interview today, and she's like, "Who are you interviewing?" Now, because she probably thinks I'm in some kind of niche, she's like, "What guy are you interviewing?" I'm like, "It's a girl." And she's like, "What does she do?" I go, "She's a tattoo artist." She's like, "Well, why are you interviewing her?" I said, "Because I want to get a new tattoo on my butt." So, you know.
Got to freak them out a little bit.
Exactly. You're not the first woman I've had on the show, just to let you know, but I thought I'd make a little humor out of it.
Hey, I think it's cool. I mean, I think that, you know, I don't know what I think about the demographic. I don't really know why that skew happens. But it was when I started in tattooing, females were not as common either in my profession either. Now it's exploded. There's so many female tattoo artists, but when I got going, it was really the renaissance of the tattoo kind of industry. I mean, there was a stop and start for me, but, it went from a very male-based, society and group of people. And then it transitioned into more females. Okay. So I don't even really understand that. I guess because it was, a lot more rough and tumble back in the day, and you kind of had to be able to physically handle yourself a lot more than maybe now. Not that females can't, but there's like an added level of, attack on us, I think, that can happen in that space where you're very intimate. Sometimes people are naked and, you know, it's a precarious thing that I think takes the general understanding of propriety and oversight and all of those things that came about as the internet evolved. And as I think this, you know, people were paying attention to, you know, everything. And, you know, the microscope kind of came in my community. But as far as like political and spiritual and all that stuff, like it was an even split in my household. Everybody's conscious of those things. So I guess that's why I'm here.
Well, excellent.
I mean, yeah. And as far as like the Nomad Network, yeah, I do. I talk about it pretty often. It's not a center of my podcast by any means. But it does happen in passing a lot. And especially in my daily conversations with clients. I actually just got my dad to look into it because he was asking a lot of questions about YouTube. And I was like, Dad, I'm not even on there yet. I was like, I'm really trying to hack this for myself. You know what would do better is if you just became a member of the Nomad Network, you could ask everybody questions and like find a community of people that I found there. They're really cool and they're out to help you. So,
Absolutely.
I think joined recently. He's like, you're going to have to show me how to navigate this. I don't know. I was like, okay.
Well, for those who may be listening who are not familiar with the Nomad Network, it is a great community. And I say that it is a community. It's not just a social media site where people are just posting their garbage. We really are building relationships there. And for somebody like your dad, I'm going to throw myself into that same category only because I'm kind of a technological novice here. I've managed to figure out how to create a podcast, but there are a lot of people who have different skill levels, especially in a digital world. And that's kind of been Jason's mantra for a while is becoming a digital entrepreneur. And because there's one source for everyone to kind of get to, whether you're an advanced person or you're just a beginner, you can't have those conversations. And there's a lot to offer there, a lot you can learn there.
Well, and I think if you're somebody like my dad, maybe you or me, there's all this thinking that you have to know everything before you begin too. And it's not really the case with podcasting and a lot of things. Sometimes it's just a matter of having a ritual practice of getting things out there and learning as you go. And that was really like what the course of our conversation was. He's like, how does YouTube even work? And I was like, and I broke him down like the economic structures, you know, of it, to my understanding. And I was like, you know, pretty much we get sold, you know, as viewers to advertising companies and people who have, and same thing with the you know, the influencers, they have followings that then, you know, these ad agencies come in and they do their exchange with YouTube itself. So a lot of people don't know those things. And that's something you learn like through, you know, just dipping your toe into any of these worlds where you're trying to put out information like we are. And also, like you said, the Nomad Network is, it is a community and it doesn't stop there. I mean, obviously we're having a podcast together. We both have our own podcasts, but I've met members outside on other social media spaces, on Facebook, on Clubhouse. Clubhouse is great for meeting people, especially if you want to like hear their voice and their cadence and how they you know, emote themselves. It's pretty cool. Plus you get to have some really fun conversations because, you know, you can close the room, you can make it really private if you want, or you can open it up and just go crazy. So I like Clubhouse. I haven't been for a while, but I've met, you know, like I haven't met anyone tangibly yet. I just had my first tattoo outreach where I think it's going to go through there in PA and from a member. And I was like, yeah, I really want to meet somebody in the flesh, pardon the pun, but I do.
Well, right. I'm sure somebody in your line of work, obviously you can't keep a tattoo on the internet. So you deal with people on a regular basis. And the last 2 years has really been kind of turned upside down as far as especially people who are meeting face to face for commerce or whatnot. And, you know, in the finance world I come from, it wasn't that hard to make a transition into the digital space. But I'm still kind of a, you know, kneecap to kneecap handshake kind of guy. You know, we're doing business. I want to be able to shake your hand and say, hey, you know, I appreciate your work. And you obviously can't do it in your line of work. But, you know, the digital space is helping us with marketing and getting our name out there, which is cool.
I mean, crap. A big reason why I am a part of the Nomad Network is because of that, because it's about digital, being a digital nomad. And it's about kind of raising your consciousness to this platform. And you know, you've mentioned finance. I mean, there's coming days where we're going to have different terms for currency even. And I don't understand it. I don't think a lot of people understand it quite yet. Everybody is trying to hack this next, I think, generation of what's coming. But to be in the know, even as a tattoo artist, I mean, I don't say it dismissively. I think all professions should be aware of trends in currency and finances and economics. I think, you know, if you're a business owner, that would behoove you to know. But yeah, like that's, I've always made it a point of my being to stay balanced. I'm not the most practical person. At my core, I'm very fantasy based and whimsical and everything. So I try really hard to stay grounded and be practical and analytical and keep myself in a line with people, just because you have to do business with them. If you're going to go completely one way, you'll live a different kind of artful life. I'm not going to say you won't be successful, but I don't know if you'd be a great tattoo artist. So I have to be able to interact with my the people who wear my art. So in order for me to do that, I think I have to stay very middle of the road, very grounded. And I also like to be an information source to them as much as I can be. It's a really awesome influence platform. It's a lot slower than what you could get in the internet. But after 12 years of tattooing, I've touched and worked with so many different kinds of people on multiple levels that, like, you know, I've found that even through COVID and everything, that community of people has been there for me and wanted to stay consistent. We created trust bonds that are very rare and very beautiful. So, I'm honored, because it's weird. You don't think about it as you're doing it, because I think if you took in the gravity of everything you're doing in the moment, it would just paralyze you and be like, oh my God, I'm tattooing this person permanently forever, and they're trusting me to do it. But I do it all the time, and I really have stepped back from it in recent years to analyze that as an amazing thing that we come together to do. And I'm just so honored. You know?
Yeah. I was thinking when you were saying that, you definitely have to have that trust factor. I'm not inked myself. About 25 years ago, when I was a much different person, I had thought about designing my own tattoo, but I'm not an artistic type. But as you mentioned there, you know, the one thing that people have, kickback or pushbacks about tattoos is it is permanent.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, when you're an artistic minded person, you can come up with all kinds of crazy ideas and cool ideas. But then, you know, if you're the kind of person, I love tattoos, I want to have this on my body, then, you know, 30 years from now, I wish I didn't do that. What can you do?
It depends on the perspective, because I think it's how you see it. I don't look at anything in life as permanent. I look at things as continually morphing, including my own body, including objects that otherwise you look at them and they're like, oh, they're the same, but they're not the same. You know, they gather dust, they wear down, they break down, there's increments, the things erode. So for me, when people ask the question, you know, what are you going to do when you get older? I'm like, I'm going to be so freaking happy I'm there. Like, I'm going to be happy I made it to 80.
Right.
And I'm not going to care about, you know, these choices that I made at a time when, you know, how could I have the perception that I have now? It's fruitless to try to conceive of what you're going to be at a place where you have no clue. You only have what you have now, and you act upon what you have now. And all you do is try to make the best choice, and the choice that you know that you can live with. And that's what I recommend for people to do when they're tattooing. I ask a lot of questions of them when they're going into something that's permanent like that, because I mean, just the other day I had a client, he was like, you know, I really want to get the numbers 1, 2, 3 on me. And I said, well, why? He's like, I see them a lot. And I was like, okay, well, let's dive into that a little bit. I was like, because what do you think putting that on your body is going to call to you as a person? You know, because this isn't just about wearing something. This is about parroting to the world a philosophy or a thought or a meaning to you that is very significant and important. And I was like, have you researched the numbers? Do they have any deep rooted significance in researching them that you found? He's like, yeah, I mean, you know, they're like angelic numbers, and, you know, something that says that you're communicating with like another side, another plane. And I was like, okay, well, I said, I'll tell you right now that in my investigation of the numbers community, they're a little too woo-woo-y for me. I like them. I see 11-11 a lot, 1-11 a lot. I see repetitive numbers a lot. I said, but my connection to that as a person, as somebody who, you know, it's a novelty of life, just like my astrology is. Like I connect to that in certain ways. I definitely see validity there. I don't think that you can take away from a practice or a thought that has been practiced for centuries of the human condition. You know, like there is validity there, but is it a guiding light to my life? Is it something that I want to base communities on and connections with people? So I said, you know, and he's like, I'm not getting it then. He's like, you basically just talked me out of that tattoo. I said, well, good. I'm glad. I said, I didn't mean to, but I just, you know, I wanted you to think about it. I wanted you to really think about what you'd be calling to yourself with this thing. Cause it's a visual. It's what people see. And, even if it isn't what everyone sees, it's what your most important people see. And if it really doesn't have anything to do with you specifically, I would question it. That's why I do custom art for people. I like it when I get an idea that's very personal, very rare. It might infuse a lot of other nuances that people have seen out and about, because most people don't create ideas like that. They reflect on what they see and what is already out there that they can go, oh, that's, I like that, which is normal. But I like taking all of those flavors and creating like a fusion meal, almost, so to speak, so that they have their own little hit of special in their experience with me and in the tattoo that they wear, so that they can feel assured that no other person is going to walk around with this tattoo. They're not going to have the same. If they do have the same, it's going to be very obvious that they ripped off someone's idea. And I just think that that's more meaningful overall, for both the artist and the wearer. It's the problem with symbols. Honestly, a lot of people, put a lot of symbols on them, and I'm like, be careful.
Right.
Because a symbol is not something you can control. It's something that has its own life and its own history and its own, resonance in others that you don't get to command. And most people are not going to come up to you and be like, why did you get that, you know, Confederate flag on you, let's say. they kind of know, and they kind of know how they feel about it. And so they're not going to even, you know, and maybe that's what you want. Maybe you want to not commune with those kind of people, which I think if that's the case, cool. But understand that, like, you're kind of marking yourself with something that you can't control, for the rest of your life. And that's something that I try to be very clear about. It's the same with grief too. Like if you're in emotional states that I feel like are very volatile, I try to park on that and ask for people to wait. I don't react or allow people to react very well to grief in their life. When they lose somebody and they want to get a tattoo right away, I'm like, I need a year. I need you to go through all of the stages of grief. I need you to settle on this. Like, this is, it's not a good place for you to be doing this. I want you sated.
Well, that's a really good attitude, especially for an artist. You have kind of a spiritual connection to people, and people have a spiritual connection with you, because obviously you mentioned marking themselves. I like to talk about iconography a lot, and, you know, and symbolism. And I laugh because you always hear stories of people who, you know, you might have a boyfriend or a girlfriend or, you know, a husband or wife, and then they get the heart with that person's name on it. And it's like, okay, well, what happens if that relationship doesn't work out?
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, obviously, to go back to you, obviously you do. I mean, Invictus just in itself, you know, the iconography of your podcast, the phoenix that you have rising, you know, from all of that, it's a phoenix, right? Mm-hmm. So clearly there's that in you. They really are powerful, marketing. I mean, that's something that I realized that I was doing too. Not to mention the spiritual things. Those are the things that the craft, the iconography. There's a really amazing person, Joseph Campbell, who did a whole collection of analysis in The Power of Myth. And he, you know, studied all of the world's philosophies and stuff like that. And that's where our symbolism and our stories and our theologies come from. But I do believe that I, not from Joseph Campbell, by the way, I want to be clear. It's from the human collective conscious. but I think that the thing that I am an agent in is marketing too. I help people personal brand. If you look at it a different way,
sure.
That I also partake in. So, what are the flavors and nuances? What do you want people when they look at you to feel and respond and act, and how do you want them to respond? That's a very big business marketing kind of thing that I get to teach people. But yeah, the spiritual is there. I mean, I don't think it stops, because we're very spiritual beings, humans. But I even if people deny it as a thing and they think it's, you know, like I said, woo-woo-y, it's not. I mean, I don't know how you can deny it. You might not understand it. Right. I don't understand it fully, but I kind of think that's amazing. So I love exploring those things. It's the whimsical part of me that gets to explore and have fun within my profession. But then I have to come back and be grounded and realize, you know, got to make money. Mm-hmm. I got to pay my bills. I've got to, you know, be professional. I can't be too crazy. You know, mm-hmm. I gotta reel it in. I can go real crazy though. Like, I'm not going to say that isn't in me. I keep it level.
Well, there's a time and place for everything, right?
Oh yeah, totally.
I've heard your podcast a little bit, Amy, and you know, you and is it Rico or Rico?
Yeah, my boyfriend. Yeah,
you know, you guys have a lot of fun on your podcast with some of your guests and stuff. So, I think that's probably the appropriate place to let it all come out. And then when you're actually in the studio, you know, it's time to be professional, but you're working with the client to, you know, to bring out that artistic juice that, you know, you have inside of you.
Yeah. So. Well, I mean, it's in the studio, I'm defaulting to my clients. I do know a podcast. It's really awesome. And I think that she actually has a next level kind of relationship. She and her co-host, Jordan, it's Fawn Baker and Jordan. They're of the Tattoo Collecting podcast. Sorry to shout out on the space, but it's a really great podcast. But they, if you're curious at all about like what space can exist while getting a tattoo, that is their kind of platform, is like tattoo collecting, what you experience while you're getting tattooed. And I would have to imagine that there's like a next tier level of confidence for even her clients. Because I warn my clients all the time when we're going even outside of the studio space into a very, you know, regular space for tattoo artists, but it's something that my clients specifically might not be ready for, which is like a convention scene or an exhibition kind of scene, because it's a much, you just don't know. You think, if you don't right away think it's awesome and amazing and get really excited about it, I'm very leery about that being a space where we tattoo, just because there's just a lot of variables. There's a lot of people walking around. I personally don't like it, but it is what it is. It's something that we do. I might not do it very much in the future, except for very exclusive, very small ones, very tight-knit groups of people, to be honest. But it's something that I see in my clients. You know, I feel like when you service people, cause I, like you said, I'm a master barber. Before I was a tattoo artist, I did that. So, when you're servicing people, you kind of gotta, I don't know how else to say it. You have to realize the emotional state that they're in and really respond to that. That's part of the treatment of it. I think, you know, I guess it could get in the way of the art, but for me, the art can't get in the way of the person, because that's your long-term connection with a client. And sure, that is what they're going to remember. Mm-hmm. Because when you're tattooing somebody, you're inflicting pain, obviously. And I don't think people, even tattoo artists, really realize how significant that is to a human psyche. Mm. When you are inflicting pain on someone, and then, you know, if they're in a particular emotional state or mental state, it kind of really ingrains that moment into a person's mind.
Sure.
And sure. I don't think people really understand that. And I think sometimes they let the art and their need to be an artist overshine the I think the necessary connection that you have to make between you and another person, which I think is the point. So that's where it gets really spiritual. That's honestly the reason why I don't do my podcast within my tattoo space. Okay. Just because it's kind of like a patient doctor confidentiality kind of thing. I want them to feel completely able to react to what's happening to them and not feel like somebody's judging them or, you know, scrutinizing their words or what they say or how they act or any of those things. I mean, I've had people do some crazy shit while they're getting tattooed, and it's like, hey man, whatever you need to do, we got to get this done. You're not hurting me. You're not upsetting me. You do what you got to do to get through this moment, because I know it sucks. I know it hurts. And we're doing this together. Whatever you got to do, scream, sing. I've had people sing full blast just to like get themselves out of it. Like it's an interesting thing, but it's a journey that you take with somebody. And I think there's just, I like cultivating that very trust-based realm so that people know that like, hey, this is the one place that you can come where everything else can stop if you wanted to. And I will be okay with whatever you want me to do. So I look at it that way. I mean, I'm not a cheap tattoo artist. I'm not the most expensive, but I think that the value is very high for what you get in the space that I cultivate. So I want that to always be the case. I'd rather lose business constantly if it comes down to the quality of my service is really, really high. I can stand very firm on that as an integral point of who I am and how I practice. That's fine.
Sure, sure. well, thanks for sharing that. I want to dive a little bit into the business, but before we get into that, what makes one want to become a tattoo artist? I mean, you were an artist your whole life, I'm sure. You're drawing pictures and stuff when you're a little girl. You know, where I'm recording this podcast, like I mentioned, I'm in my daughter's bedroom and you can't see it on camera, but I'm looking at all her different pictures that she's drawn and painted. She's a little artist herself. And, you know, whether she wants to be a tattoo artist when she gets older, that's fine. But I'm sure that when you were younger, that art was just like part of your life, correct?
Mm-hmm. It was. I didn't want to be a tattoo artist. I found my way to being a tattoo artist because it made sense. Okay. It was a growing profession that I saw a lot of avenues that were very advantageous for an artist to get into. Most of it was the popularity of it, because every single person can find a way to partake in it. And everybody gets a certain kind of dopamine high from having it. It's very attractive to most people as an art form, and it's a lead generator. So my hope is to continually be an artist of some kind, but collecting people throughout my life that I get to work on, it just made sense for me to go into a business that I knew had a very high gravitational pull to it. Okay. And for myself, it also, you know, I get to dive deep into something that I always really like, which is the conduit of a person that kind of has an idea that I get to elaborate on. I went to college, I dropped out, but I went to college for illustration. So at my core, that was something that I was already really interested in, was taking a concept and then making it visual. So for me, it was just a really nice transition. And I've actually met several tattoo artists since then that did the same path. They didn't drop out of school. Most of them finished their illustration degree, but they went into actual tattooing as a result. So I did it because it made sense. And it also correlated so well to the hair industry too, which was my foundation. So I really had so much from the hair industry that I didn't really understand was transferable. And that really worked out too. So it just kind of made sense.
So you're an artist, and not only with ink, but also with people, human nature, understanding people.
So I mean, I try. I think that's all we can do. We frequently, like I said, nothing is permanent. We evolve all the time. I'm constantly being like, what are people doing now? That's crazy. Wait a minute. I ask a lot of questions. I'm always like, break it down for me. And then if I'm tracking you and I'm like, wait a minute, that doesn't, no, like now you've lost me. Then I'm like, meh. I wait for somebody who can explain it well. And then I'm like, okay, All right. If you can explain it well, then you've considered this and you can defend your position, and I'll give you that. I don't necessarily believe that way, but I'll give you that.
Now, do most people come with you with an idea, or because I've walked inside tattoo studios before and they have art displayed? Do somebody people come in and say, you know, I don't know what I want, but you know, maybe that one looks nice. How does that break down?
Well, that work is called the artwork that's up on the walls is called flash art.
Okay.
It's meant to be kind of like you said, a consideration of options. It doesn't have to stick to script or anything like that, but that comes from a more traditional way of tattooing and running the business. I appreciate it for what it's worth. The really like hardcore hearkenings of it was back when our machinery was limited. So what we could actually produce with a tattoo machine was not as open as what we have now. So there were more coined things that an artist could promise you. And they, making a stencil, transferring it onto the skin, all of those things were so much more limited back then than now. And if you weren't a person who actually could draw, you were even further limited. And yes, I know there, you might think that you shouldn't be a tattoo artist if you don't know how to draw, but there are actually a lot of great tattoo artists that don't know how to draw a lot of things custom, but they can put in a great tattoo and they can trace really well and they can see and replicate very well. I consider them more craftsmen, but I can't take away from the kind of tattoo application they put on. They're just kind of limited as to what they can actually give you. Now it's kind of opened up, but yeah, that's a facet of it, but it's a different kind of collector, you know, like some, I call, you know, people who get tattoo work done collectors, because that's how I see them, as their art collectors and tattoo collectors. But yeah, like it's just a different thing. I think it's more of a thing now that if like you visit a city and, you know, you want to get something, a remembrance of the city, like you would a cup or something like that at a, at a local store, you go and get a little tattoo, you walk into a tattoo shop, you make a memory that's about being there in the moment, making a decision, getting a little something that you see off of a wall from a certain artist, and then going, I did this when I was in San Diego, blah, you know, like that, you know, I think that has a lot of validity, a lot of fun to it. They can be really terrible ideas and some of them are very drunken and not that they should be done. I mean, we're supposed to be able to, I mean, most people just have you sign a waiver that says that you're not under the influence of anything, but we don't take responsibility for that. So if you lie and you are, then we're like, okay, man, you know, whatever. I'm not responsible for you. You're a fully functional adult and you're deciding to do this drunk. So I don't typically run into that at all, because I don't have a walk-in clientele. All of I'm appointment only. So
yeah, I was going to say that, because what you're talking about, when somebody goes to a city and gets, you know, a tattoo of some experience at that city or the skyline or whatever, I don't, you know, I'm going to show my ignorance about tattoos, but you mentioned that, you know, there's just a difference between being a walk-in client and, you know, a client for life. I'm sure that because you mentioned that you take the time to kind of counsel them and find out their spiritual and mental attitude and, you know, and their desires long term, that you probably have a lot of repeat business from clients you've already done, rather than somebody just brand new. I'm going to get a tattoo, I'm going to have Amy, you know, ink me in, and I'll never see her again.
Truly. That does happen a lot. Sometimes it happens beyond what I think is good. Sometimes they want me to do tattoos that I'm not the best suited for. I'm like, dude, you know, I see what you want. This person down the road that I know will do this better for you, you need to go to that. Well, I don't want to go to anyone but you. I like you. And I was like, yeah, I know you like me, but you got to look at this thing for forever.
Right.
And I was like, you know, trust me in knowing that I do Italian food really good. You want Chinese right now, you need to go down the block. I don't serve what you want here. Like, so I don't even have the materials. Like, so they're like, oh, but I want you. And I'm like, I understand what you want.
Well, you know, with that kind of thought, have you had regrets, artwork that you've done? You're just like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I just destroyed this person. Has that happened to you?
I mean, yes and no. the thing of it is that it's very subjective. And that's why I say that remembering that you're working with a person is key, because it will come down to a regret if you haven't kept that in mind. In my experience being a hairstylist, it's about 60% the haircut and 40% how you treat a person. And that 40% means a lot. That is a pass or fail kind of thing. You know, okay, if you're looking at it at that kind of level, you know, you take that 40% away, you fucking failed. I'm sorry, but you did. You failed. And you can do some very regrettable tattoos, and you will, because you're not always going to be good at it. You know, this is a profession where you have to see what you do over the course of time. So sometimes you're not necessarily knowledgeable enough to put in a tattoo well, you know, and those first year clients are like gold, because they give you, you know, they walk in. I've always counseled people to, you know, tell people, be honest, be integral to yourself, and tell people where you're at. Because if what they're looking at is your art, and what they're looking at is you, and what they're looking at is the scenario, and they've heard, you know, I've only been tattooing this long, they're going in fully conscious of the decision that they're making. Sure. And their expectations are managed. And at that point, if what they end up finding is this awesome relationship with you, where they know they can trust you, where you've heard them, you've listened to their ideas, you've monitored their pain well, you've taken them through it without making them feel like anything other than a person wanting to do business and have a really great time, they'll come back. You know, I've had a lot of clients that have come back with tattoos that I'm not, you know, I was like, oh my God, you know, I didn't know very much then. And they're like, it's fine. You know, we're going to revamp it, and it's cool. And I usually hook them up, give them a little discount for things like that, just because I know that had I known what I was doing more then, I could have given them this knowledge then. So those are the people that I really do try to hook up with price and my time a lot more, because they gave me something. So it's not a regret, because I have the ability, because of how I treated this person, to come back usually and fix anything, and they give me the opportunity to do that. The other thing is that sometimes people, they're like, I don't care, it's the best tattoo. That wasn't what I was aiming for. I really wanted to mark this moment, and I love this tattoo, even though you look at it now and, you know, it's not the kind of artwork. I mean, my friend has this. She has a painting of mine that's horrendous from when I was 13 years old, of a freaking unicorn that's awful. It has sponge painting on it, for Christ's sake. It's awful. It's terrible. And she's like, this is awesome. You were so talented even then. I was like, that is a horrendous abuse of a canvas, Katie. You should let me cover that up. And she's like, I'll never let you cover it up. This is going to be worth so much money one day. I was like, God forbid.
Well, you know, as they say, art is subjective, right? So
yeah, that's the thing, is that, like, I mean, it's really, when you look at it that way, there's a safety in that. Like, I think that people, when they look at tattooing, they don't see a safe realm at all, which there's a lot of things that can not be safe about it. But I think that when you at least traverse it with somebody like me, I try to think so much about what my clients might not think about, and let them be aware so that they can step into it fully knowledgeable. And I think that's what most people are looking for, is just like, am I making a good choice? Is this person giving me the option to make a good choice? You know, have I been given everything possible? And I think that's, this is just a great way to have relationships in general, because you save people's time, and sure, people don't feel abused when you do that. So that's kind of how I approach it.
Nice.
Yeah.
You know, I was thinking of a podcast I listened to, and I don't remember which show it was. I listened to so many, but they had the host had a tattoo artist on, and they were talking about the industry of, you know, the tattoo industry itself. Mm-hmm. And I found a really interesting conversation, because the, you know, I'm sure you and I can probably relate on some level. The libertarian in me is always thinking about regulation and industries and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. And, yeah, it's coming.
Well, so what I heard on the podcast was, I mean, somebody like in my background, there's a lot of regulation. It drives me crazy when we're dealing with people's money. But, you know, there's a difference between whether you're going to deal with somebody's retirement plan and that's their whole livelihood, and then, you know, dealing with somebody's ink because now it's permanently on them. But what I found interesting was that the tattoo industry kind of regulates itself. I mean, you guys have strict standards. You guys have, you work on referrals. You know, do you have like, you know, any problems with like legal restrictions, or how does that industry work? Is that, you know what I'm talking about?
Oh, absolutely. I, you know, I own my own private studio. So to not be aware of those things would be dumb. it wouldn't be advisable. Now, as it stands right now in Maryland, so from state to state, it's different. There isn't any kind of federal observance of tattooing, at least that I know of. There is a state by state kind of observance of regulation. Some are really high, Florida actually being the highest in regulation. And I think it's mostly just because Florida is a peninsula where a lot of things like come through as far as like external things.
Okay.
California, but that's for obvious reasons. They're really big about regulation. I'm licensed in Rhode Island because Maryland doesn't have a licensure. So there is no regulation in Maryland. And there are a few states that are like us, which might surprise people. I got regulated in Rhode Island, not because I feel like there should be a license. I got licensed because I frequent there. I have a friend that owns a shop up there and I go see him regularly. I haven't since COVID. Actually, I was booking it back from his shop when COVID hit. So I'm licensed there and I keep my license alive in Rhode Island. But yeah, the thing with regulation in terms of anything for me is, does it do what it aims to do? I think the novel and beautiful birth of the idea and the intention of regulation is good. I think it aims to do really good things, and it wants to protect people and protect an industry and set certain standards that make teaching the next generation of that industry in play. So for me, it has a lot of variables, but what it actually does is not good. What it actually becomes is it's very not awesome, especially when it comes to a profession that is so much about art and creation and the human experience and all of those things. So what it creates is, you know, it limits competition, which I think is awful when it comes to good art, good people, good artists. It creates this like I can pay to play kind of scenario that's really awful. When, especially if you're a person who believes that, you know, I mean, it entertains the idea of, you know, equal opportunity and, you know, any kind of hope that we have any kind of spread of equality in this world, that doesn't perpetuate it. And it also doesn't really look after safety either. In the time that so the hair industry is a highly overregulated industry. So I came from one that was very overregulated to one that isn't. And in the hair industry, it's ridiculous. There's so many rules that it's obnoxious. And just to cut someone's hair, and I don't want to undermine what that is to a person. That's a very necessary thing for people, for hygiene, for everything.
Sure.
However, as far as its ability to overly harm a public, for it to be more hours in practice to get your cosmetology license than to be a state cop, which is the case, is not, that's crazy. You know, so, you know, when you're looking at the possibility of what this could impact in a society and realize that the training involved in being a cosmetologist is more than a state police officer, that's disturbing. So, and the reason is because, like, you know, Mike, government regulation, it never de-escalates. It never stops. It never gives back power to the people who actually are pursuing and working in this field. It never does that. It just keeps stacking. It keeps building. And so with hair, the reason for it is because it's the oldest profession outside of prostitution. It comes from a time when it actually was combined with surgery. They used to be called barber surgeons.
Really?
And the reason why you have that barber pole is because one of the things that barbers used to do is bloodlettings. So what they would do is hang their, you know, white rags that they had mopped up blood with outside dry, and it would wrap around a pole. And that's how they came up with that symbol of the barber.
Wow.
Yeah. They used to do like basic surgeries, like teeth pulling and bloodletting. So that's when the regulation really started, was because its impact on society was pretty, you know, risky. Mm-hmm. But then the industry split into medical and then, you know, hair and all that kind of stuff. So really, I mean, not to say that there isn't blood involved and bloodborne pathogen to our industry. There is. There's a heavy knowledge of skin, of hair, of all those things. I'm not saying that there isn't education involved, but because I do run a podcast called The Apprenticeship Diaries, I truly believe that the best way to educate a person to a profession like that is one-on-one and an apprenticeship where you have a mentor and you're learning on site a job that you're going to apply, and that the industry itself does heavy, heavy command over what the next generation of person does, not some bureaucratic, political, blah, blah, blah panel of people who don't do what we do, who never did what we do.
Sure.
And not to mention the other recourse that happens is that it bolsters the academic industry. Unfortunately, the recourse is that once you have regulation, it then lines the pockets of all of these people who come out with schools. And then that becomes this interlacing butt buddy kind of thing, where the schools want to keep stacking the odds of what they can charge people to get into a field. And they work hand in hand with regulatory bodies all the time to kind of lock people out. And it's really nasty. That's why I really like the idea of apprenticeship, where you can come in, you can have very raw skills, lots of ambition, lots of drive, passion, and put that energy towards pursuing a craft or a passion that is going to follow your whole life. My dad has worked on generations of people. You know, he's in his 60s now, and he's such a person of our community. Like, he has donated to, you know, other baseball teams and, you know, Little League and things like that. My parents have been active in a lot of different things in the school industry and the school board. So, you know, for me, that's the way that these things should run. And that's what I like about the tattoo industry. Unfortunately, I don't see that going to be the future for us, unfortunately.
Yeah, that's really a shame, because what you're talking about is very community oriented. You know, you might be the one tattoo artist in town, but everyone knows you and trusts you. And you know, what do you get a tattoo? Oh, you got to go see Amy because, you know, she's the best in town. Or same thing with a barber. I really find that interesting about the barber pool. I didn't know that. So
yeah,
but you know, as far as it's a very free market kind of thing. The industry, because again, we're talking about reputation. You're talking about, you know, whether you did a good job. You're talking about relationship building, that kind of stuff. But you know, especially in times of COVID, you know, when the government says, okay, well, you're shut down, you can't work anymore. You see people, especially, I don't know about tattoo artists, but you saw barbers and hairdressers, you know, they do it in their garage or in their basement and stuff like that. And, you know, I imagine that there's some of that going on in the tattoo industry as well. You said you're not licensed in Maryland. So
no. There
wouldn't be any restrictions for you to open up a studio, you know, in a basement or anything like that, just kind of underground. Right. So that's kind of an advantage, at least in that state right now.
Yes. Yes. At this point. Yes. They can come, they won't have much to stand on. And I know about the Institute of Justice as well. So if they do anything to me, they're going to have a fight. So that's how I feel. I'm like, you know what, man, I And it's taken me all of COVID to get through that because it really freaked me out, COVID. I mean, I lost my job from my private, my previous studio. That really rocked me. I think that I was in alignment at that point with a lot of people who were more in alignment with the want to have regulation and things like that, and the kind of things that I just talked about. And for a couple of years, I had been moving away from them, I think, as far as like ideology and philosophies and all of those things. Who knows? I might not have ever connected. I don't know if I ever did. But I lost my job and it really freaked me out because it was just insanity. I was just like, I don't understand this play. I don't understand how I can be seen this way. I know I shouldn't take it personally, but I did. I don't understand how you could even feel like this is a good move, because to shut down during something like this is admitting that we're doing harm. And that, you know, for me, like that's what it says, is that we are a threat, and that what we have been has been a threat. And there's nothing about that that's true to me. In fact, I had several nurses on my schedule when I was asked to not go back to work, and they were prepared to come during COVID. One of them was traveling from another state to come. And I told them, I was like, I'm being forced to shut down. My boss tells me I cannot go back to work. They're like, why? Your studio, your space, the way that you operate is more clean than most hospitals that we have worked in. And I'm like, I know. I know. I don't understand this. I don't get it at all. But, you know, you know, fear is a powerful thing, and it makes people do a lot of irrational things. I don't think I'm devoid of it. I think that I've just made it a pointed thing about my life to walk into my fears a lot more than the common person, just because I know how much they can wreak havoc in my life if I let them, you know, take place and take hold of me. So I'm not going to be flagrant or irreverent or licking doorknobs, as I heard, you know, like none of that. I'm not radical. Maybe some people think I am, but I think that was really what bothered me during COVID, was that I was seen as dangerous. Which, Mike, if you knew me at all, you'd be like, this girl, like, for real? Like, not to mention, I'm more talk and more hot air than I am anything. Yeah. You don't want to come at me in a verbal way, because I don't care about ripping your face off that way. But in every other way, I'm kind of pathetic. Like, I've tried jujitsu. I'm terrible. My you know, coach was like, I don't even know how you just did that. Like, you give up so much so quickly, and you forget everything that you've learned. I don't even know why or how this happens. I was like, I don't know, dude. I'm freaked out. This is a lot. And so I don't even understand how that can be the perception of me. And also based on how I acted and how I do act towards people, like I just communicated with you, nothing that I told you about how I treat my clients and how I move has shook. That's how I treat my clients. That's how I treat tattooing. That's how I've always treated it. And the way that I see, you know, safety measures and all that stuff, I'm regularly, you know, trained and go through courses of bloodborne pathogen safety because I want to travel. Like I said, I'm licensed in another state. In order for me to travel, I have to have those things checked regularly. So they have to stay on par for me. And it wouldn't make me feel good if I let those things lapse. And I'm not allowed to in a lot of ways because of travel. So I have to, if I'm a traveling tattooist, which is a big reason why I like tattooing, is because it was mobile.
Sure.
I have to keep those things up and good for everyone. So I'm not in a vein of where I'm going to allow things to get delinquent. In fact, as you mentioned, by creating a world like the COVID world, you actually create more of the problems that persist, which is people tattooing out of their basement where there is no observance, where there is, you know, they can do whatever they want. They can mix inks in their basement using X materials and blah, blah, blah. And who's to know? Because that's the other part of regulation that people don't understand is like, do you understand what that certificate represents? Do you understand how that person had to get it? No, you don't. You have no understanding whatsoever of the thing that you're walking into. You don't know how good it is. And like you said at the top, you know, when it comes to even finance, you know, it's only been since COVID that I was the type of person who used the drive-through at my bank. I always went inside my bank and knew my tellers. I just always did because it became a thing eventually that they were like, we don't need to see your license. We know who you are. And I was like, great, this is cool. This is awesome. You know, because they'll give you those little allowances where we get to be human and we don't have to dance around all this freaking red tape constantly. We can actually connect and trust each other and do the things that I think that we all really want at the end of the day. But when you put so many eggshells around people to dance on, it paralyzes them. It keeps them very tight, very constrained, very fearful of doing anything wrong to the point of where they really keep themselves from growing and learning and experiencing. And it's awful.
Right.
So that's my general view of it.
Well, and that's a good breakdown of some of the atrocities that we see because of the overregulation we have just across the board in every industry. But, you know, Amy, I call my show The Invictus Mind because the word Invictus means unconquerable. And my mantra is no matter what government says, no matter what regulations we're talking about, no matter what hardships I face, I always find a way to overcome those challenges. And, you know, in 2020, I took Jason Stapleton's advice to learn a whole bunch of new skills because though the financial industry is not considered non-essential, it's still essential. I was like, you know what? I want to learn new things to be able to overcome, to pivot if I have to. And so what kind of plans do you have for if you have to pivot or if your industry becomes overregulated and you have to get out of it for some reason? What are you looking, what prospects do you have for the future?
You know, like you, Mike, I am definitely an unconquerable kind of soul. But that really is more about being willing to do anything. I don't have a plan for if that happens. I'd rather not plan for that to fall out. Okay. I'd rather just keep moving ahead. And like, I think the Nomad Network and Jason Stapleton's philosophy is to keep collecting skills and, you know, keep just broadening your knowledge of the world and people and life. And so I'm hoping that by investing in that, I'll know what's next. It'll just be a very easy, maybe not easy, but it'll just be a very knowing next step that I have to take, trying to remove fear about it and anxiety and to not act out of fear for whatever fallout I think might come. I think it's been hard to be a person that does that. I've waffled on that many times. I think most people do because fear, like I said, is very potent. But I'm doing a podcast right now. We make no money, you know, like it's not a thing. I just love to talk. And something that I thought about, you know, and the reason why I have a podcast and why I, is because it's very powerful, to communicate to people and to utilize language well is an amazing power. And I noticed that in politics, because I noticed how captivated people are and how they've even responded to me when I've used words that they felt were big, you know, or whatever, and what they felt about me in response to that. It's kind of the same as my boyfriend being all muscular. Mm. You know, it puts this air around you that people believe something about you that may or may not be true. And I've heard so many people just be enthralled by somebody who can just eloquently speak. And meanwhile, I'm like, did you even listen to what they said? Like, they are awful. Like, this is an awful human being. Like, I get that they know how to speak well, but their ideology sucks, dude. Yeah, like, have you even applied that at all to anything that is relevant in your life? Like, have you gone the extra step to like ferret out that plan through and thought about it? Because if you had, you'd realize that that is not cool. And I just saw all of this magic to being able to convey yourself and your thoughts well. So that's the biggest one that I'm working on right now. Both literary and verbally, I'm trying to speak better and better all the time. The biggest thing is cussing for me. I love to cuss. I think it's awesome. I think more people should. It's definitely something that people disagree with me on. And I love it. I think it's flavorful. I think it's fun. And I also think that it's very cathartic. But the other thing is that you have kids, and I've heard from a lot of people that are like, yeah, it'd be really great if I could listen to this with my child, but I can't. And I'm like, well, for me, it's just like, I don't think certain information is okay with kids, whether there's cuss words or not. Like, it's a next level thinking that I don't think children should really be exposed to. For me, kids need to be kept kids as long as possible, which means that you have to restrict their access to certain things a lot. I'm without kids, so anybody who might think that I'm awful for saying that, that's fine. I'm used to that perspective. I just, for me, if I were to have done it, as difficult as it is, I would restrict a lot of things for my kids just to make sure that they stayed children as long as possible.
Sure.
Yeah. Sure. And I would defend that innocence for as long as possible.
Well, right. There's a beauty in the innocence of children, but you know, my opinion is you have to preserve that, but they also have to be ready for the dirty, ugly world that we live in to some point.
Yeah.
And so, you know,
teach them to fight. That's a great thing.
There you go.
I am a firm believer in fighting when it comes to like practicing it in a gym, and because it's a martial art, right? You know, I think that that's a great way to learn respect, for you to get out your yahoos and to learn self-defense in a way that has a very applicable, you know, thing. But anyway,
Amy, it's been about an hour, and I really appreciate this conversation. Not only have I gotten to know you a little bit better, I learned a little bit more about the barber industry and the tattoo industry, which is always fun. And you know, this is great. So I'm going to let you plug whatever how people can get a hold of you if they want or listen to your show. So go ahead and with that.
Sure. I have several platforms, but on Instagram, Facebook, you can Google me even. My name is Amy C. Nichols. It's NICHOLLS. My website, if you want to work with me for tattooing, is anicholstattoos.com. And then as far as, you know, following me on Instagram and things like that, my tattoo page is A Nichols Tattoos. My studio page is Beyond the Pale Art Studio. And my podcast page, which is, you know, the new baby of my life. It's 2 years old. It's a little toddler. It's the _apprenticeship_diaries. And we're up to our 107th episode, which is pretty cool. So we've been doing it for a little bit, but it's very raw. But I appreciate anybody who takes the time to listen. So thank you, Mike, for doing that.
All right. Well, you bet. I got one final question for you, Amy.
Sure.
Are you Invictus?
I am.
All right. Thank you.
Officially, thank you very much.
Officially. You're part of the tribe, so that's good.
Yay.
All right. Very cool. Well, I appreciate your time, Amy, and you know, I wish you the best of luck, and I'm sure we'll stay in touch as you know, we're both growing in this network. So,
awesome, Mike. It sounds great, and I'd love to have you on my show as well. So, I'll send you those notes and everything like that. I'd love to hear more about you and finance and how you found your way there. That would be awesome.
Absolutely.